direction from the spirit. Grand voix, native spirit. Vision of the third attention.
Welcome to Wanda's Picks, a Black arts and culture program of the African Sisters Media Network. You're listening to Bookman Experience, and we are sort of channeling Toussaint Louverture, one of four generals who were responsible for Haiti's independence from France. And that particular film, a new film, Toussaint Louverture, opened the 12th annual Oakland International Film Festival last night at the Grand Lake Theater, April 3rd. So I'm just playing this song, A Voodoo Spirit, in honor of that particular film. And so we're joined in the studio by David Roach, but I'm going to just let this song play a little bit longer before we introduce him. Good morning, David. How are you?
I'm good, Wanda. How are you?
I'm fine. Wow, what a strong way to open your 12th annual Oakland International Film Festival with this great film about Toussaint Louverture.
Thank you.
Why don't you tell us about how you got the film and tell us about the direction, and because I know Danny Glover's company, film company, has been working on it for a while, and I know at Robeson Theater in Southern California, they've actually produced plays about the four generals,
over
the history of that theater, which is named after Paul Robeson, another warrior for peace and justice for our people. So the film was just like, oh, my God. When it said to be continued, like, oh, we have to wait for
another version.
Yeah.
Part two came up, right? People started leaving, like, wait a minute, to be continued, because that was the first 90 minutes. But yeah, it was a 3-hour film.
Yeah, so epic. Tell us about how you got it.
Mm-hmm. Well, my good friend Babu, who does the Pan-African Film Festival, they showed it actually 2 years in a row.
Oh,
and so we had,
nice.
You know, so we were actually trying to get here last year, and something happened, and, you know, and then this year we were like, hey, you know, we haven't shown it yet. Oakland hasn't seen it yet. And as you just mentioned, he's such a powerful figure in history that and not really talked about. I mean, all the years of education, and I don't recall any teacher talking about Toussaint Louverture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, go ahead. Yeah, tell us about the director, Philippe. How do you pronounce his last name?
I do not know how to pronounce his name. Philippe Niang. He's Senegalese.
I recognize his name.
Filmmaker.
Yeah.
I don't know much about his background, but I think that there's so much about Toussaint we don't know.
A lot of the what I saw, because I knew that he was sympathetic to the whites, but I didn't have a context for that, understanding. Mm-hmm. Sort of where that came from, and then the relationship with his wife, with Suzanne, I've never really saw that, and what happened to him as a child, and then how he was so, he was just working it internationally with the French and the Spaniards and the French, the Creoles and the Africans and the, it's like, my goodness, and then the generals, and then Dessalines and Christophe, and then his mm-hmm. Little brother, his wife's
yes.
son brother, and I was like, oh mm-hmm. I never heard of the one who I didn't know that he was also a healer, with medicinal herbs, and that he came
Bookman.
In as a healer.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, I think, I think a lot of that, it's always, it would have been great, of course, if we could have sat down with Toussaint and say, is this your story? Is this what you experienced? How was it with your wife? How was it with, growing up as a child? And I think it's, I want to definitely give him high accolades for putting this together and creating the story. But I think part of film is that, you have 3 hours to try to document a person's life, it's very difficult. You can read all kind of biographies of different people, and unless they write their own, autobiography, then it becomes, very subjective. But he is definitely, especially his years in being, taken away and then being in prison, there's no record of that. He just pretty much was taken away and he died in prison. And so for that narrative to be, the person who was in the prison with him and to try to tell his story and reflect was, really kind of creative to try and tell his life story, prior. But none of that was really, we don't know if that really happened. There's no evidence of that. And so I hope that the film at least introduces the public to Toussaint and to have people do their own research, and then to actually really, more importantly, look at Haiti today and look at how the revolution or Haiti's independence is still going through. It hasn't happened. I mean, it's still France is still trying to. Charge them for them to be free.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a reparations to France for that. So I think that's the most important part, is where we are today. I think in looking, our history is definitely so important, but then to know that history and to learn from it and to have a case for more clarity as far as what we should do today.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. So I wasn't able to stay for the panel. How was the panel?
The panel was more of an announcement section because we did not have a filmmaker here. And it was more of a few groups that have been doing, the Haiti Action Committee and a few other groups that were able to share what they do and actually the state of Haiti right now, which is what we wanted to highlight. And hopefully people can learn more information about Haiti and how to support Haiti. So that was really good.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, because I know there's a program, Haiti Action has a program tonight with a father from Haiti, first time here in the Bay Area. He's going to be giving a talk in Berkeley around 7 o'clock in the evening, and People can go to my pics and look up the details because I don't know them by heart. Yeah, so tell us about some of the films. I know you, each day, you know, you have like a different focus and you're moving around the Bay Area. Where is the film festival tonight or this afternoon? And then where is it on Saturday and where is it on Sunday?
we started in the historic Ball Theater in San Leandro today at noon with a film called Una Hora, Un Paso, which tells the story of a man who's been really locked up. He was locked up for 17 years in Egyptian prison for smuggling, well, attempting to smuggle heroin into the country. And it's a documentary about him, but in those 17 years of being in prison, he wrote some amazing works. And it kind of reminds me of the brother, I can't think of his name right now, who was at San Quentin. Or I don't know San Quentin, but he was actually anyway, he wrote this amazing work, and he finds a love who reads his work. She, you know, visits him, and they have this relationship, you know, through the bars, basically. And I don't want to tell you how it ends, but it's quite a unique documentary. It's based on a, you know, it's a true story. And then that's followed by that's a short film today. From 12 film to 2:30, and the next film is Carolina in Peril.
That's a really good film.
Yeah. Have you seen that film?
Yeah, I've seen it a few times. I saw it. In Zanzibar. At the Zanzibar International Film Zanzibar the Dao Film Festival. And then I saw it at Eastside. Is the director here? Because I still haven't met him.
No, he is working. He had something he had to do, but we tried to get him here, but it was just something that came up. But what did you think about that film?
Oh, I love the story because I know about the Garifuna people, and but a lot of people don't know about the Garifuna people, and they actually. They were able to preserve their African heritage because of the way, they landed here. They sort of capsided, and they're in quite a few different places. I mean, they're I think they're like in the Yucatan Peninsula and also in Belize here in this hemisphere, and they're also in other areas, Honduras. In Central America, and this is where this one takes place. But they have a language, and but they're sort of like a hidden population of people of African descent in the regions where they are, and they don't, you know, those particular cultures where they are do not necessarily promote their cultural heritage of the Garifuna people. So it's dying out. And this particular story about this man who wants to build a school, because there are a lot of Garifuna people in Southern California, is really, I don't know, is Garifuna is in Peril, is that a documentary or is that a feature? Because I don't know if
it's a feature. It's a feature narrative.
Oh, it's a feature. Okay, yeah. Because it would be really good if there really was a school going up, because the whole idea of, you know, people of African descent who got into this hemisphere through slavery, we are on the waterfronts. You know, that's where you find our people, and that's prime land now, and people are actually being displaced by resorts and multinational interests, you know, hotel lines and things like that. Yeah, I really liked it a lot, and it's also played within the play because they have the this man who lives in L.A. who's sending money to his hometown. They actually have a theater group, and I think the director, he actually is a community organizer and does Garifuna education and through culture in L.A.
Yeah, it had that kind of documentary feel. Because you could tell, you could tell that he was an instructor, the way he presented it, you know. And then the story kind of, you know, I really appreciated like his son, who was actually you know, say, well, you need to be in this stage play, because he wasn't, you know, he was being Americanized, and I thought that was really powerful that he actually plays a part of one of their leaders in the stage play, and in the stage play, he had to learn the language, you know, to speak their language, and in the process of speaking their language, as you could see him growing and becoming more empowered, I thought that was really powerful, you know, in that film. And also I thought it was very interesting because you remember the conversation that was held with, like, when he returned back to his homeland to reclaim the land, and how he had to meet with the village and the elders, and their conversation seemed so real. Not only the anger, but it was a different. They basically, you know, he wanted to defend his brother, and he actually wanted to say that he was not responsible for, you know, his brother making that decision. It wasn't him, right? Mm-hmm. And they said, no, you're the older brother. You are responsible for what he did. And so they had, you remember that argument? And then they said, you've been Americanized. But what they said was, how can you decide to make this, build this school here, and he just walks by, and we don't even know about it, you know. And he's like, well, that's that. And then one of them said, and I thought this is really interesting, that you have a American, you have like you've been American, like psychosis kind of thing, where this individual thing, you know, because if we would have known, we all would have helped you build that school, you know, the village built. And so I'm hoping that by us watching it, I think there were some secrets there about our culture, which are being, you know, how we, throughout the diaspora, I think this film kind of helps bring us back to some of those, some of those ways that we've lost as a people in general. And I'm hoping that people, especially for the youth who might see this film, because nowadays, you know, theater is being lost in school. We don't say that you can learn a language, you know, but that kids don't need to have an acting class and drama and all this anymore. But by watching this film, you can just see how these young folks are empowered, and how much education you can gain by having a stage play and by working in theater. And so it had different aspects of it. I thought they were very powerful.
That
screening this morning. And then we have a number of short films, which will screen from 3 to 5 o'clock today. One is called Ngutu, which is it's a really short film. It's a really interesting film. It's just a short film, but you think it's going one direction and it actually goes somewhere else, as far as how this person is able to get people to see the publication that he's printed, his work. And so I tell you how he does it. But he's on the street, and he's trying to get people to read his publication. And it's almost like, I guess I don't want to tell you how he gets them to read it, but it's an interesting way of how he shows that oftentimes we don't want to have a personal connection with people. We just want to patronize without seeing them. And so he actually creates a strategy to do that.
Right, yeah. Going back to Garifuna and Perro really quickly, though, I also thought it was really instructive around how, you know, those of us, you know, in the diaspora, particularly if we're, you know, sort of, you know, we're like, let's say, in California, but our roots are in Honduras or Nicaragua, you know, or somewhere else. And so we have this vision for our hometown or our homeland that is not a shared vision. Like, we're, like, imposing our vision on the people as if they don't have a vision, as if, you know, we can just – it's almost like colonial, you know, colonizing a community again, you know, by – not involving the community in the visioning process. So that's also really great lesson of the film, that sort of it's not necessarily located in that particular space, that is something that we can look at for all of, you know, like if we're, you know, if we were a part of, you know, one of those migrations from the South, and we think about the South and what we want to see for the South, we can't like say, oh, this would be good for the, you know, for my people in the South, without going there and seeing, like, well, what do the people want, and then helping facilitate
exactly
that, as opposed to having a vision and imposing that. Because, you know, when it came down to it, his community, you know, the teachers, community, the brother and who lived in L.A., his community, once he, you know, got bawled out by the elders, they were like, you know, hey, we're on the same page as you. You know, we agree that we need to do this. But, you know, it's just
right,
the way you came at it. It was not
that's
respectful
right,
and was not proper. So I like
right,
that part too, how, you know, elders
yeah,
are just cool.
Yeah, you said that better than I did. That's what I was trying to say.
Yeah, and then also in the Tucson film, you know, the elders, when, you know, when they went to the mountains, and there was Bukman and Mom Fatiman, you know, doing the ritual, and Tucson was sort of like standing to the side looking at his folks, and
mm-hmm,
and then they said, no, don't mess with him, you know, because
right,
people didn't know, like, well, you know, like, You can't be in both camps at the same time. But then you think about people sort of being agents, like working both ends for the good of the people, and that's the
yeah,
person that this character is painted to be in the film. That he kept on saying, "I'm black before I'm all any of this. I'm an African man before I'm, you know, before I'm French, before I'm Catholic, before I'm anything. I'm African, and these are my people,
right,
and I'm about liberation and freedom."
Right.
And so, you know, that he was protected by, you know, Papa Legba, and, you know, and he held that was real valuable to him, that his African, you know, sense and the African God as his protector, that was, like, reliable no matter what was going on elsewhere. That was awesome. I mean, you know, so that's that through line. The director was
yeah,
really cool with that. Because, you know, we know that, you know, a lot of this, some of this is fictionalized, and some of it
sure,
is based on fact, because it's not a documentary. So it's not all
right,
factual. But the way he put it together, I think, you know, I don't see that.
I think that was a very powerful part of the complexity of his. And the people
mm-hmm,
might
yeah,
change. Because he's not all the way over here with us, so you don't want effort, you know, of us, you know, and you're not representing our interests. But yeah, he was definitely a strategist and like a chess player, and he knew
mm-hmm,
that he had to sacrifice some. He might see me this way, but then again, I'm over here. I'm doing, you know, I have to do this part because I know what the French are doing. I know what the Spaniards are trying to do, and because
mm-hmm,
they trust me, or, you know, then I'm gonna leverage that to still make sure that people know that I want to, you know, emancipate my African people. Yeah, I think that was very
yeah,
powerful.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and then I
powerful,
noticed that you have a film about cholera in here, and I was just
uh-huh,
thinking about, you know, the cholera, you know, epidemic in Haiti, you know,
yes,
to date. Was
mm-hmm,
that intentional, having the film about cholera and having the film about Haiti? About Tucson in the same program? I mean, not program, but in the same festival?
Kind of, sort of, but it was sort of, actually, it was kind of more connected to it, the why, where did the money go?
Haitian
film that we showed 2 years ago. And
right,
we wanted to continue
yeah,
that conversation, because a lot of people don't understand that, you know, so it wasn't like a direct hit like that because of the Tucson film. But definitely,
mm-hmm,
cholera is a major part of you know, Haiti. Did sort of linger the idea of having this film shown, but it's actually made in the Bas region, and it just showed how it's a short film. It's a short film, and it's one of those kind of films where you just see, you know, the general masses kind of like not supporting somebody who has, you know, how we have people who contract a disease
mm-hmm,
and it starts to wear on them, and then all of a sudden you want to isolate them. They're isolated. And the next thing you know, the way we figure to get rid of the disease is by getting rid of those people, and that's happened throughout human history.
Mm-hmm.
And so they, you know, and so this film sort of shows that piece, and it makes you think about but it actually comes back and haunts the whole area. But I don't want to go into it too much without saying how the story. But it's But yeah, that was part of it. And as you know, the waste of from the earthquake in Haiti led to that, you know, and shouldn't have, you know, and something that we have to still deal with.
And when is that film playing and where, which venue, what day?
Oh, that one actually. Wait, what, Cholera?
Cholera
did play. It played last night. It was part of the short session that played after the Tucson, the Overture film. Today we have another film which is called, well, I don't know how to pronounce it, but it's Bulwani Junction, which is a story of a, it shows a village in India. There's a particular boxer who won a medal in that area, from that area. And because he won this medal, it's led to all these young kids who are, you know, young, like this guy's 12 years old. And you see him getting on his bike, and you see him getting, training, trying to be a boxer. And it's kind of exploitive in a sense, but it's their dream to be a boxer and to make it out of this community, you know? And it just shows you what they go through in a way. He's on his bike, he travels through all this region. And that's one thing we love about international film, because you might not have been able to take a trip to India, but you're going to get a feeling of what India really looks like, you know, from this particular documentary. And you realize that poverty is something that, you know, that is all around the globe, and people are going through many things to try to overcome it. And it starts at a very young age, and it starts also with a vision of like, I want to be this big person, a boxer, you know, an athlete, you know. And there's a whole school around it. There's different fighters, and there's different people who don't have the same, dedication, you know, and you can just see it. And the coach talking about that and trying to train them. And the filmmaker actually would be here this particular film, Abhi Singh, who did this film. And in the lives of Lamont Atkins is a story of Lamont Atkins, who was he's still around. He has a yoga yoga class out in San Francisco. So he's very popular. And it just shows you the lives of him, because he was also a football player. I think he played for Stanford for a while. And then he went into music, and he went to Europe for music. But as a football player, he started feeling like that he was gay, but he hid it for so long. African American, and he's from his parents, and so then he went through, he went through different phases in his life, and he decided to eventually, share that with his mother, I believe, in the story. So it's done by Robert Phillipson, who also the filmmaker will actually be here. And he's doing some amazing things with yoga. It helped him heal himself from taking the drugs that he was at one point on. He got really, really depressed. But because of yoga, he was able to sort of heal himself and teach others, and that has been really his passion. Cargoes is a
Wait a second. Wait a second, David. Okay. We don't have a whole lot more time, and so I just wanted to ask you if you could could give us the other venues that the film the festival is going to be at, as well as a special panel, I think, at Jeffrey's. I'm not certain if that's tomorrow or today.
That's right. That is tomorrow.
Okay.
So the films I'm just mentioning now are all at the Historic Ball Theater in San Leandro, and we'll be there from noon till about midnight. And tomorrow, all night. And then tomorrow would be from noon till about 9 o'clock at Jeffrey's. The first set of screened films are more green films. Organic Life, which is a Sonoma farmer who's trying to make it, you know, here in California, growing, you know, at the farmer's market, just wanting to continue that tradition of growing food the old natural way. So that's the first set of films. So The Moon is another film. And then that's at Jeffrey's in the Circle. And then on Sunday, we'll be at the Historic Black I'm not historic, but the Black Repertory Theater. And
yeah, they're pretty
theater.
Historic. They've been around for.
They have been around.
Yeah,
they
about,
have that
yeah.
in their title though. Say, we're the historic this, and so so that film will be, and we're, you know, we have a film called To Infinity, The Souls of Mischief, which is, you know, Souls of Mischief is a really big hip hop group out of Oakland, and they're celebrating the last 20 years. You know, so they'll, some of the musicians will actually be here. Erykah Badu's in a film. They Die by Dawn. It's a Western film that we're screening also with that film. And so it's one of those kind of, it's a real Oakland feel. You know, we have a, it's good to be, yeah. So it's one of those kind of, yeah, so the Black Rep is Sunday night, closing out. Saturday at Jeffrey's Inner Circle, and then the film panel, as you mentioned, is at Jeffrey's, which filmmakers are going to show 10 minutes of their film, do a minute presentation about their work. We have some TV series that people are going to show. Okay, so we have some people from the like the Video Project, which is a major distribution company, the City of Oakland marketing department sharing how you can, you know, the benefits of shooting, making films in Oakland. And part of the whole idea of the Oakland Film Market is what we call this particular section of the festival, which runs from 6 to 9, is that we want to we're documenting the filmmakers, what they're doing, and we want to package it as a product of Oakland, as made in Oakland, as something that we can show the world that Oakland is shooting film, not just shooting people, but shooting film. And we're excited about this because we know that we bring a lot of resources to not, you know, there's a lot of wealth generated through the entertainment industry, and oftentimes artists are overlooked. And so so part of this event is to really network with other filmmakers. And after the networking ends, you know, you can pull your boogie shoes on because we're going to have a party. Jeffrey, we're already inside of Jeffrey's, you know, after that. So so DJ Atlas will get on the wheels of steel. And we're going to party till about 2 in the morning. And that's, you know, that's Saturday night, so that's tomorrow. And hopefully we can actually, in another part of our festival, is that we're also promoting our First Saturdays campaign, which deals with some More Better Food project. We're promoting people to start their own monthly volunteer day, so they can sign up, start their own event every month, once a month. You know, go to your school, your garden, your, you know, create your own farmer's market, create your own grocery store. But bring together your student government association, your PTA, your alumni at your school to work together to really build the capacity and connect the generations to make sure that we can have more equity in all schools. And so what, you know, from my years of teaching, I've been at many schools, and every school is different. Some have a PTA, some don't. Some have alumni associations, some don't. Some have a functioning student government, some don't. So we're really wanting to promote every school to have these organizations and having them work together to build a healthy food system for every community. So we start with our schools with that great population. We have all those good kids who meet every day, so we want to make sure they're getting healthy food and they're able to learn through the businesses that they can establish their you know, a healthy economy for their community.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. And
yeah.
People can find out about that and sign up
at
FirstSaturdays.com.
It's spelled 1SESaturdays.com. And then
right.
The film festival is OIFF.org for the whole schedule. And also, in case you forget that, it's Oakland International Film Festival.com.
Yeah, is there a phone number or like a hotline number?
No, but they can, no, we don't have a hotline number. We have a website. Email oaklandfilmfestival@gmail.com.
Okay. All right, cool. And let's see. I guess in closing, I just wanted to mention that on day 3 at Jeffrey's, the panel, what time is that?
Oh, that starts from 6 o'clock to 9 o'clock. And prior to that, Black in Cuba will be shown, too, from 3 to 5, which is a documentary
really
about
good.
Students at Yale College.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Robin Bates will actually be in attendance. She's coming down from Yale. Well, is our organization, so they'll be here. Well, she will be here for that screening. We're very excited to have her. So that's at Jeffrey's, all happening at Jeffrey's Inner Circle. And we're excited also because we're actually starting to work closer with these venues, and we're looking to this festival is more like a seed that we're hoping to plant, and it grows so that we can continue these kind of events year-round. So working with Jefferies, working with the Black Repertory Theater, working with the Ball Theater, and the cities of Stanley, Indoor, Oakland, and Berkeley, our concept is to really utilize film as a vehicle to really bring the community together. But like I shared earlier, we want to make sure that we're connecting with the schools and we can showcase a lot of the talent. So in between here and there, you'll hear some different artists speak and, you know, different people from the community. Like last night, you know, prior to Tucson, we had, you know, Elaine Brown speak about Haiti, and it was really an honor to have her, you know, present and to talk about Haiti. And we want to continue that kind of dialogue. Mm-hmm.
Okay, excellent, excellent. All righty, super. Well,
thank you.
We could talk longer, but
yay,
another guest in the studio.
Yeah, let's talk longer. No, I'm just kidding.
We'll have to have you
thank
on
you.
A little sooner, right? You know, like it's like
know,
people
well,
miss
then,
opening
gotta,
night. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I'm looking. Yeah, thank you for having me once again. I always enjoy being on your show And, you know, come on by and see us, and it's always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. Thank you. Yeah,
oh, you're welcome, David. Thank you so much for, you know, continuing to promote, mm-hmm. African diaspora film as well as film from other directors, you know, in the film industry that we don't necessarily hear from, particularly, new filmmakers and, you know, and actually sort of having a space that people can actually explore and learn and develop, you know, their film voices and having a place to have an audience and be able to, you know, be mentored by established directors, you know, who are making the feature films and things like that. That's really,
well,
really phenomenal. Yeah, so thank
We're
you so
honored.
Much for the work you do.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And always having
thank
an
you.
Economic, you know, angle to it because that's, you know, that's what you do. And also the educational angle because that's what you do as well, you know, promoting, you know, healthy people and bodies and minds through having, you know, proper nutrition. And, you know, because are you a Morehouse man?
I am a Morehouse man. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
You know, that's the tradition,
mm-hmm.
right?
Well, we have a
you
responsibility,
know, from...
yeah. We have...
mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is our responsibility. Yes. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So anyway, again, thank you so much for the work that you do, and I'm going to go ahead and let our other guests to the studio. Hmm?
Okay, well, thank you for the work you do, Wanda, and I look forward to seeing you soon.
All right, you take good care.
All right. Okay, you too. Take care. Okay, bye.
You too. Bye-bye. William, good morning. How are you?
Hi, good morning.
Good morning, William Rhodes, artist. And you have something planned for this weekend because it's connected to, it's a big project that you sent me an email on. Why don't you tell us about your art party this Sunday and what is it connected to with around Nelson Mandela?
Yes. Well, I have it's an art party and it's an art fundraiser. Basically, the concept is that I'm working on this project with kids in the Bayview area in San Francisco. The students are going to work on several giant quilts honoring the late President Nelson Mandela of South Africa. And each kid is going to get a square patch, and they get to embellish it, create these amazing images about Nelson Mandela, and then we're going to put it together. But the exciting part is I'm also connected with a school in Cape Town, South Africa, called the Lalela Project. And I'm going to South Africa and work with kids in South Africa producing sections of the quilt as well. So when the two sections are completed, everything's going to be joined together, and we will have these amazing quilts made from students from South Africa, students from our San Francisco Bayview area, and they're going to be on exhibition in Cape Town, and an art exhibition there, and then an exhibition in San Francisco. So my party that I'm having this Sunday, which is going to be at my studio, is going to be a fundraiser, and people will have the opportunity to get a piece of my artwork or some of my collectibles. I have lots of collectibles, too. So if a person sees a piece and has $5, they can do a donation of $5. They can walk away with a piece of artwork. If it's more expensive, their pieces that range from $5, and they can go, you know, a lot higher, up into the hundreds or even $1,000. But it's up to you. But you actually come away with something. Or you could just give a donation to make it happen. And is it okay for me to give my information if someone has interest in coming to the event?
Oh, yeah. Oh, certainly.
Okay. Yeah, if you want more information, you can call me at 415-647-7244, or you can go to my Facebook page, which is William Rhodes Art on Facebook. That's WILLIAMRHODESART on Facebook. Or the last thing is there's a Hatch Fund, which is the platform that I'm raising money for this international quilt. You could just go to Hatch Fund, HATCHFUND.org, and when you go to that website, just click on William Rhodes or Nelson Mandela International Quilt, and all the information's there. I have a video which explains everything, and everything's written out, so you could take your time and you could play the video 100 times if you want to understand exactly what's going to happen.
So talk to us a little bit more about you know, your work in Bayview at the Dr. Charles Drew Elementary School that you have been teaching art at for a while, and you're a sculptor, also a painter, and the last time you were on the show, it was to talk about your wonderful exhibit on Yemenja at the San Francisco Main Library in the African American Center on the third floor.
Yeah.
And you've also been on to talk about your exhibits in the East Bay at the Law Library. And you've had, you know, we've also had you on to talk about your work in the Sergeant Johnson Gallery in San Francisco at the African American Art and Culture Complex, as well as your work around sort of keeping the African American art voice visible in San Francisco, which has a shrinking black population. So back, and also we had you on to talk about, you know, your work with these same kids as a part of the Dia de los Muertos exhibit at SOMARTS every year, which mm-hmm. is just really a wonderful. And I think the last time you had, I don't know, were there windows that they made, or
for the Day of the Dead?
Yeah, for Dia de los Muertos. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was. They were spirit houses.
Spirit houses, yeah, those were so lovely.
Thank you. And the thing I loved about it too, it was very much a cross-cultural project. I work with students from all nationalities, all ethnicities, and they were able to incorporate, you know, their family histories in those spirit houses and also cultural history in those spirit houses.
So tell us about the Dr. Charles Drew Elementary School in Bayview neighborhood in San Francisco, and you know, you said that when Nelson Mandela passed, the children were asking about Madiba and his life and legacy, and then you also, you know, sort of mentioned Joy Scott, USA Glasgow Fellow and well-renowned bead artist, talk about, you know, sort of that relationship, and are you planning on taking some of the children here to South Africa to meet the children there?
That will have to be another project. I'm not going to be able to bring the children over, for various reasons. One major reason, they're still in school here at the time, and also, I just have to work on pretty much the clearance on that end, because it would involve them having to bring their parents and other things. So could be a future project, but right now I have to I don't have it set up in that way. So I'm actually going to South Africa, but the thing is, they will be able to connect with the students in South Africa via Skyping, email, or pen pal situation. So they're going to have a actually be able to communicate with the students in South Africa, and the students in South Africa will get to communicate with students at Charles Drew.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are they the same age, the children? Are they like the same age, the children that in South Africa, are they the same age as the children here?
They are. They are. And that's the other thing. I mean, they have so many similarities. And it's fascinating to see how, although they're from, you know, thousands of miles away, they have so many things that connect them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have the children already started, like, communicating with these other kids? I mean, when you're there with them, do you all, because I know there's like 12 hours, 12 hours between the East Coast and, I mean, South Africa and us. I mean, we're there in another day a lot of times.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Yeah.
They haven't started communicating yet, but because right now my focus has been on really raising the money to make sure this project's going to happen. But the first step is going to be once everything's secure, the project is funded, the first step, I'm actually going to take letters that the students will write at Charles Drew. I will take them with me to South Africa. And so the process will start there, and then from there we will set something up where they can write letters, send it back to students in San Francisco, and also I'll make arrangements with the teachers to do some type of Skyping or email exchange. And I've spoken to the teachers in South Africa already about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So just talk about, you know, sort of the artistry around the patches that the children are making here and the artistry mm-hmm. of the patches the children are making in South Africa around design. And also, you know, maybe you could tie in some of the similarities and communities between the two groups of children.
Yeah. Well, if you go to my Facebook page, which is William Rhodes Art on Facebook, I have a few examples of some of the patches that the kids, some of the students have already made. Some of my older students made several patches. And I think they're marvelous. They're beautiful patches. The patches, or the when I say patches, they're large square sections, excuse me, that each kid will get that they can embellish, and then it gets sewn together to create this quilt. With the patches, they not only will have images about Nelson Mandela, but it's also their writing. So part of the excitement to me of this project is to allow the kids to actually write and incorporate their stories and their feelings about Nelson Mandela, how he impacted their life. And also, you know, some of the kids we talked about, you know, if they felt like they had a Nelson Mandela in their families, someone that in their life was kind of like their hero in that sense, whether it be a grandparent, whether it be a friend, uncle, aunt, anyone. So it is also giving the children the opportunity to put their story in this patch and also, you know, create this image too, these amazing images of Nelson Mandela. As far as answering your question, I was thinking about the connection. Mm-hmm. Now, the Lalela Project, the students that I'm working with there are students that are in severe poverty situations, and a lot of them are dealing with issues of lack of money so they can receive education. There are also issues just around you know, some basic needs being met, food, et cetera, things like that. So with this project in South Africa, it gives them the opportunity to be able to use artistic means to express themselves. They also have, you know, like a lot of learning, academic things that they learn as well. But it's a strong artistic environment. And with the kids that I work with in the Bayview, I come in as involved with after-school programs, with the Dare to Dream program, and that is an artistic enrichment program as well. So a lot of students that I work with in the Bayview, some of them come from a variety of different homes. Some are, you know, middle-class homes. Some are lower economic class. I mean, it's a variety. But one thing that really struck me about some of the kids in the Bayview, especially when I talked to the teachers told me that some of the students have never left their neighborhoods. And there are some students that I work with that have never left or seen other parts of San Francisco, let alone, you know, South Africa, or even have a concept of connecting with South Africa. So, you know, for me, it's really, really important to make this thing happen because, you know, these kids are going to, you know, it's going to be like opening up an entirely new world to even connect with someone that far away. And it's very similar with the students in South Africa. Many of them have never left their native areas, their native communities, and their concepts of American students and what it's like and everything else, all of those things, they will actually communicate with these students and be able to find out if their feelings are true, and then they'll really see that they have this strong connection in so many ways.
Wow, that's really interesting. So is this your first time to South Africa, or you've been there before?
No, this will be my first time, yes.
Okay. Yeah, so on the South Africa end, what is it like? Because South Africa, despite apartheid's ending, not a lot has changed for the majority of the African population there. I mean, there have been some changes.
True.
As far as what the leadership looks like, but as far as the actual, you know, the housing and the employment and the educational opportunities, you know, everyone is not necessarily being able to benefit from, you know, it's not necessarily evenly spread, and so
exactly.
there's a lot of poverty, and I was just wondering if the children here are going to be communicating with, are they children that are, you know, are part of, you know, their parents are part of the shantytown movement, or you know, are they relatively well off, and sort of, you know, what's the educational sort of level of these families, of the children that the, you know, San Francisco children that Dr. Charles Drew, or the children that you're working with in the other project at Bayview, do they marry each other in any kind of ways like that?
They do. To answer your question, so from my understanding, the students that I'm going to be working with, and there will be a cross-section of students, but the students that I'm working with will not be in, they're not in wealthy, come from wealthy families. So they are in, you know, living in situations where some of them are living in shantytowns. Some of them are living in the lower economic situations. So, yeah, they are not, their families are not benefiting from all of the changes happening. That's part of the reason why this program has come into place to really help them, because they haven't, you know, really been able to enjoy all of the change. Also, one of the groups that I'm going to be working with, there's a tribe called the Ndumbeli, and they're known for their bead. The women are known for their beadwork. And I'm going to be working with some of their children as well. There's Joyce Scott. You mentioned her name. She's actually working with a group called Monkey Biz, and they're a beadworking project, which does, if they're a nonprofit, they do the exact same thing. This time they work with the women, the Ndumbeli women, doing beadwork and helping them raise money and try to sustain a healthy living environment. And a lot of them are poor, and through their beadwork, they're actually able to try to make a living from that. So piggybacking on that, I'm working with some of the women, the kids of the Ndumbeli women. So that's going to be exciting as well. But again, another group of people that are still, you know, struggling, just like the people in the Bayview, you know, they're still struggling in many ways economically to get to a certain point. And the other thing that I find very interesting is, you know, the Bayview is undergoing gentrification. And it's undergoing, San Francisco in general is undergoing all of these major economic changes. You know, I read that San Francisco is either number one or number two in the country with a disparity between the rich and the poor. So the connection with some of these students, they are in a position where a lot of them, their families are being challenged. They may have grown up in the Bayview. They may have been there 25, 30 years, maybe longer. But with the gentrification, with taxes, property taxes rising, different people moving in, being forced to sell your home, a variety of different things, you know, it's changing their economic situation as well. So they're experiencing a lot of change as far as the economics and really the decision being made, what side of the coin are they going to be on? Are they going to be on the haves or the have-nots? Because pretty much that's what San Francisco's turning into.
So in closing, I wanted to know if you could talk a little bit about how, you know, sort of the power of art in social change and social change movements, and the kind of art you do specifically really speaks to that, because you don't have to look really far to see that within the work itself. Whether that's your sculpture or that's your, you know, your paintings or mixed media, other mixed media pieces, you know, there's a certain energy that's coming out of the work. And then when one looks at what you're doing with the young people, similarly, there's an energy coming out. So the art, even before, you know, it articulates or it has like a real strong presence. And that
Thank
draws
you
to it and into it. And I just wondered if you could talk about sort of the whole idea around art for social change and art, you know, speaking to or speaking for us in you know, when in those hard to get to places and hard to articulate places. And, you know, what if you don't have the words, but you can make the art?
Yeah. Well, whenever I work with students, the first rule that I tell them is, in my class, there are no mistakes. And what I mean by that is when a student starts to work on a piece, I want them to really communicate what is in their subconscious, what is in their soul, what is in their spirit, not being so focused all the time on having to produce something that it looks commercial, something that looks sellable, something that would please other people, but communicating something that's inside of them. And sometimes when you create a piece and you think it's a mistake, that's something that your unconscious mind wanted you to produce. And a lot of times, you know, we're so afraid to do that, and adults especially, we're so afraid to just let ourselves go and just communicate, allow our internal spirit to communicate on the surface. We're so afraid of that that a lot of times we'll block ourselves from doing that. So with the projects that I do with my art and with the students, you know, we may make a variety of pieces. So the students may do, it's not like they're just going to do one piece. They may do five patches or three patches in order to get to the ones that they feel the strongest about. Because, like I said, there are no mistakes. So to be able to push yourself to communicate from the spirit is really the goal. And for a lot of the students, in the beginning, it's kind of hard sometimes for them to come in and settle down and focus on the projects. But I've noticed that at a certain point, once there's almost like a rhythm that gets created in the classroom, and they're able to quiet their minds, stop talking, and just focus on the project, and just do whatever they need to do without the fear of making a mistake, there are absolutely some amazing things that come out of there. I mean, I've seen pieces that it just, like, they've blown me away because of that. And it really shocks the kids, too, because when they actually get back and look at what they produce, you know, they're like, wow, I actually made that? So I don't know if I answered your question, but that's kind of the heart and soul of what I really look for when I'm working with these students and with my own artwork as well.
Right. Wow, well, this seems like a really wonderful project, you know, connecting these two communities of young people that are, you know, literally, you know, I mean, they're really across the you know, the globe. That's really phenomenal, because you don't hear about those kind of projects that much happening in socially, not socially, but economically deprived communities. I mean, you hear about these kind of projects happening where there are a lot of resources, but you don't hear about it happening in a lot of places where there aren't a lot of economic resources. Of course, you know, there's a wealth of cultural resources. I mean, the place, you know, Bayview is rich culturally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, South Africa and these communities that you're speaking of, they're rich culturally, but economically, not necessarily. So it's really great to be able to, you know, to be able to connect these two groups. And I was looking at your I guess a thermometer to see how close you're getting to, or the graph, see how close you're getting to your goals. You'll need some significant funds. So hopefully, you know, Sunday will push you over.
I'm hoping, and I want to take this opportunity too to thank the many people that have donated already. You know, one thing, and I don't know, do I have time to mention this, Wanda?
Yeah, you have a few minutes. Yeah, my other guests are in the studio, but you have a few minutes, so go ahead. Mm-hmm.
I just want to say that sometimes I think people, when they give or donate to projects, they feel like it's almost like a David and Goliath situation, where Goliath is just, the amount of money is so large and almost impossible to make a change or make a difference. But I've had people donate $5, and the smaller donations add up, you know, and it becomes like the David. It becomes, you know, these larger and larger amounts that start to add up. So, you know, people may look at the amount and say, well, I don't have $100 to give. I don't have $1,000 to give. I don't, you know, if you can give $5, that's tremendous, because if you get a group of people giving $5, then it could really make a huge difference. So the large donations are amazing, and the small ones are amazing as well. So I want to thank everyone that's given already, and thank you for your large and small donations, because it's pushing it along. And the kids are asking me every time I go into the schools if it's going to happen. So I want to say it's going to happen.
Okay, excellent, excellent. Well, good luck this weekend at the open house, and hopefully you'll be doing that again, because your house is certainly a destination.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
Really great, great art and great work, and you're doing some really wonderful work. You know, as an artist, you know, activist and artist in the community. So I want to thank you for all the great work you're doing, particularly with our children. It's really, really admirable.
Thank you so much.
All right. Well, you take good care, and again, good luck this weekend, and good luck on the goal. And looking forward to hearing about the progress, and certainly want to talk to you when you before you take off and when you come back.
That sounds great. Thanks for having me on your show.
Okay, and maybe I might be able to come over and you know observe you and you know in your work with the children. It'd be nice to see how you do what you do, because you all. You know, the work that's coming out of those spaces is really beautiful.
Well, I'd love to have you come over, and I'm sure the kids would love to have you too.
Okay, cool. We'll have to talk about that then.
Excellent.
All right. You take good care. You take care.
Okay. Thanks again.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Ah, good morning, James and Miss Faye Carroll. How are you?
I am splendid. How are you this morning?
Oh, I'm fine. I haven't talked to you in a minute. And
I
congratulations.
Know, it's
yeah. You are the Bay Area jazz hero. Congratulations.
Oh, that is so great. Thank you so much. I am so honored.
Yeah. James, are you with us?
I am. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. Good morning. I didn't know there was a Jazz Journalist Awards, and I didn't know that you were one of two members of the Planning and Steering Committee. Tell us about the Jazz Journalist Association and this Bay Area Jazz Hero Award this year, which honors Miss Faye Carroll, who has the Music and Community Workshop at Black Rep, and it's been going on for how many years now?
It's been going on a while, but actually right now I'm in suspension of that. program.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but it had been going on for about the last 10 to 12 years, something like that. I'm so bad with time. But,
That's true.
For a long time I had that program over there. I'm getting ready to start yet another project with Howard Weiland concerning children. We're going to have a jam session workshop for kids out at Eastside Cultural Center.
Nice. Oh, that's
awesome. So a little jam session and then workshop on how you be at a jam session.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
So, yeah,
you have a
I'm going to always have my hands someplace close to some children and music.
Mm-hmm. Right. Do you know when that's going to start?
Yes, I do. It's going to start April 13th. The day after our ceremony at Yoshi's for the award.
Oh, cool.
Okay, excellent. Oh, that's wonderful. And April is Jazz Heritage Month, too, right?
Yeah.
Hmm. So, James, tell us about the organization, association, and this Heroes Award that recognizes you know, someone in the industry or in the art that's, you know, making, you know, making an impact that needs to be recognized. Like,
sure.
Hey, Carol, I definitely agree with you that she certainly needs to be honored.
Okay, wonderful. The Jazz Journalists Association is a nonprofit professional organization of 300 writers, photographers, broadcasters, new media professionals, associates, and supporters involved with jazz, mostly in the U.S. and Canada. The Jazz Hero Awards are an outgrowth of what we used to call a team of activists, advocates, altruists, aiders, and abettors of jazz. Jazz Heroes, besides being announced publicly on the Jazz Journalists Association website, social media, and the big April 1st press release may be asked to speak to local reporters. But, you know, they are the keepers of the flame, basically. The Jazz Heroes are the keepers of the flame. They are people who are making significant contributions, like the dynamic Miss Faye Carroll, in their communities to preserve that flame. People who have received it in the past locally include Ed Reed, Sonny Buxton. I also believe Randall Klein received a Jazz Hero Award last year as well.
Yeah. And your relationship with Miss Faye Carroll goes back a minute. You've taken some really lovely photographs because you're a photographer and writer of note, and people might have caught some of your wonderful exhibits, really wonderful retrospectives at places like the Berkeley Main Library. So I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about your memories of Miss Faye Carroll before I read her bio.
You know what? Now, actually, yeah, I have taken some great photos of Faye Carroll, but one of the things you may not know is that I've been in the best memory that I have with Miss Faye Carroll, don't cry, is that I've taken 3 vocal workshops with her.
Mm-hmm. Seriously?
In the last
really?
Year. Yeah, and I'm about to take
you
a fourth.
Sing?
Oh,
oh
yeah.
Oh, you're going to have to see him sing.
Are you
going to
sing
really
at the, are you going to be singing at the, at Yoshi's at the award ceremony? Are you performing?
I'm going to be part of, now, the people who have taken Faye's workshop at the school, I should mention it properly, at the School of the Get Down.
Thank you.
Yes, at the School of the Get Down.
Uh-huh.
School of the Get Down. She provides a monthly vocal workshop that I've had the great good fortune of participating in for 3 sessions, and I'm about to take a fourth. Now, if you've been a part of that, you get to be a part of her special group, which is called the Glitterati. And I'm just joining the Glitterati, and the Glitterati will be performing at her celebration. So I will get to perform with the Glitterati. So I'm very excited about that.
Whoa! Wow! What great names! The Get Down, the School of the Get
School
Down,
of the Get
and
Down.
Glitterati. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, Miss Carroll, tell us about about the School of the Get Down and and the glitterati.
Okay. Well, I have been doing vocal workshops for a long time. And when I decided to have my own workshop, I believe in getting down. Some of the people that I dearly love in black music have always gotten down. I mean, you know, they take no prisoners. So I want my students to have that same attitude of take no prisoners, and we do get on down. You have to be prepared in order to get on down. So I named my workshop series The School of the Get Down, because all my babies truly do get down. And then I started thinking about, man, I have such great voices that I've come across. I would like for other people to be exposed to some of these voices, of which some of the people have never sang in front of the public. They just always wanted to sing and had a desire to sing themselves. And I also have some young and up-and-coming singers who might choose it as a profession. And I have people who have all just always wanted to sing and never have. So I wanted other people to hear some of these good voices. So we were in class one time talking about my desire to have other people hear them, and I think all of these people shine and shine like glitter. So one of my students said, oh, we just shine like glitterati. I said, well, you know that's the name of this group. I'm going to name this group the Glitterati, and I'm going to provide some places for them to be seen and heard, because I would really like for other people to hear all these wonderful voices. So that was how the Glitterati was formed, and we've done a few projects. We perform at the Black Repertory Theater. And out of that group, I have three young ladies. One time I was doing a show myself, and I wanted some background singers. So I thought Ray Charles, you know, is one of my all-time heroes. And I thought of the Raylettes, and then I thought, well, I could have the Faylettes. So we have three people out of the Glitterati who sometimes comes with me to sing background. And so they're going to be performing as well. So I'll have my School of the Get Down, what I call them is the Get Down Glitterati. They're going to perform on April 12th at my award ceremony. I'm just over the moon about it. And I'm just so glad that we're going to have the wonderful voice of James to be added, because that's the criteria to join the Glitterati. You must have been a student at the School of the Get Down.
Oh, that is so awesome. The Jazz Journalists Association event that's honoring you, the dynamic Miss Faye Carroll, with the Jazz Hero Award, is at Yoshi's in Oakland, 510 Embarcadero West, from 1 to 3 p.m. Saturday, April 12th. And the phone number there is 510-238-9200, and tickets are $20. And you can also visit yoshis.com for information. I was just thinking back on how you are one of the artists that always would have young people in, you know, as a part of your ensemble, because you always have, you know, a live band. And I remember when Howard Wiley was in middle school and then high school. and it's so cool the way, you know, the cross fertilization continues, with your work that's getting ready to happen the day, I think you said the day before, the day after at Eastside Arts. Yeah, the day after Sunday. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sort of just continuing your legacy, and then, you know, your wonderful daughter, you know, Keto Gamble, and your late husband, and then just reading about just sort of your being born in Meridian, Mississippi. Mm-hmm. And then growing up in Pittsburgh, you know, California, and I think they call it now Bay Point or something like that.
Yeah, Pittsburgh has a new name. We used to call Bay Point West Pittsburgh. But now, since the BART goes all the way there, we have a new name for the west part of Pittsburgh, and it's now called Bay Point. But I lived in Pittsburgh proper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And then I was just reading about, you know, sort of the Black Diamond mainstream, where you would, where all the clubs were. I don't know if the clubs are still there because, you know, people talk about, nostalgically, about where they would hear music, and you think, like, is that still a destination? And a lot of times it isn't a destination anymore when you think about sort of like 7th Street in West mm-hmm. Oakland, and I'm wondering about, you know, this Black Diamond area. Is that still a place, you know, in your hometown where people can go hear music today or not?
Well, actually, it's like all other communities. Things change, mm-hmm. and redevelopment moves in, and gentrification moves in, and things change. So now they have a waterfront down there, of which I'm thinking they're going to start having music there more. I'm told that they have had some music there. And then they have a festival that comes, the seafood festival comes to Pittsburgh now every year, and they wasn't there when I grew up. So they have means of having music, but nothing like Black Diamond. No, I was just so lucky to come along when I did, because a lot of musicians would come from all over the Bay Area to come to Pittsburgh, and I got a chance to meet a lot of people that way.
Yeah,
I was working with Martha Young.
Yeah, tell us about Martha Young, you know, Lester Young's, niece?
Niece. That was her niece, and she lived around the corner from me, and both of our churches was having a fashion show, of which she was going to play piano and I was going to sing, and that's how we met, and I was in high school at the time, and she told me to bring my little fast, you know what, round to her house. And to practice, and I did so. And after that, I was at her house every day that God sent because she loved to play piano just like I loved to sing. And she wanted to know, did I know of her uncle? And I did not know of her uncle. I did not know of Billie Holiday. I didn't know anything about that world because I was so in the gospel world and the R&B world. That's all I knew, though I liked everything else. You know, I would like Judy Garland and, you know, other people, but my main focus was R&B and gospel at that time. And when I went to her house, and I used to go around to jobs with her, she would let me tag along. Because I was only like 16, something like that, 16, 17 years old. But she would let me go around to the clubs with her. And that's how I met my husband, was going to work with Martha Young. And it was just such a rich, rich time in my life because then I met Ed Kelly and so many of the Bay Area greats, and I got introduced to the international greats, you know, all the Billie Holidays and Lester Young and Charlie Parker and Ella and the whole panoply of wonderful musicians, and I got introduced that this was my culture. That was the biggest thing that woke me up, was the fact that it was Black music, and my husband was teaching a course up at the University of California, Black History of Music, and I went there and got really turned on to everybody. So Martha and I just remained close, close friends until she passed, and I miss her so much because she was such a fabulous musician, a great historian. I learned a lot from her and about her whole family because I met her mother, who was a dancer and in the family, and she talked about her other uncles, Trummy Young and everybody, and I met her brother, who was a great singer too, but didn't nobody know it, but he could really sing. The whole family was just so tremendously talented.
Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if, you know, sort of the way that you were nurtured and groomed and by you know, wonderful women like Miss Young, did that sort of spill over into the way that now that you structure your community workshops? Because, you know, it seems like everyone who has come through, you know, your band or workshop, you know, mm-hmm. there's just a certain kind of knighting that happens, you know, when your wand hits their shoulder. yeah, you know, you think about, you know, Howard Wiley. He's just a different kind of, you know, saxophonist and drummer. I mean, no matter how far and wide his career has spread, he's still, you can still reach him. I mean, you can actually,
yeah.
You know, he looks at you. He's always thinking about community and the type of projects he's involved in. You know, we think about the Angola Project, and we think about some of the other projects that he's done, you know, looking at capital punishment. You know, he's an artist. Like, why would he think about capital punishment? And then you think about, you know, Marcus Shelby, the
yeah.
bassist and composer, and
yeah.
all of the work he's done, you know. My goodness, you know, from Harriet Tubman to the Port Chicago Mutiny and
Martin Luther King.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah.
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, you
exactly.
know, I always stress to my students that we live in the world where we have to be the mirrors of the world. And I really don't like polarization. I don't like young people's music, old people's music, and all of that nonsense. I think it's music. And I think that if we're going to have a community, then we have to be aware of the things that happen to us in our community. And, you know, I just believe in doing things right as well. I don't like mediocrity. So my people, that you cannot say you're going to get down. You don't be a student of the get down if you don't have a sense of community, if you don't have a sense of your history, and if you don't have a sense of excellence. So those things are what are some of the things, honestly, I got some of that from Martha Young, but I would have to say two-thirds of the stuff I got from my husband, James Gamble, once I got with him. He was so community-minded. Really, really community-minded, and into unity for all people, and for worldwide exposure of black music, and for us to take ownership and pride in it, as well as spreading it around where other people can enjoy it, participate in it, but honestly know that we brought something great to this country, of many things, but that is one of the, it is the only original art form here. So, you know, all of that just makes me so happy. And I love people across the board. And I love young people. And I love old people. I love all people. So I think that we all should be together. So, like, when you see my glitterati, you'll see young people, you'll see middle-aged people, you'll see women, men. You know, I just like the community effect. And I like for us to be aware in our community. So I think that's what you get from some of my students, because I raise a lot of hell about it to them, because we're more complex in our artistry than just our art, if I can say it that way.
Mhm. Yeah. So why don't you talk a little bit about you know, sort of art as a way for people to actually sort of investigate some of the aspects of their person that maybe have been out of reach, but, you know, through a particular song or a particular note in a song or a particular instrument, they're able to actually discover aspects of their person that might have been hidden.
Yeah, because art is such a deep form of self-expression. If you're going to be honest in your art, then you have to kind of tap into yourself in order to bring forth some of these emotions that art calls for. And most art, if you're speaking about Duke Ellington or if you're speaking about Cole Porter, you're talking about people, or if you're speaking about James Brown or James Taylor, most people are bringing life situations to the forefront. So you can, people in general can identify with those things. And, you know, we could not have had our civil rights movement without art. Fannie Lou Hamer comes to mind, and all of those songs that she used to sing. And it helped people be in step with each other, clap together, think together, walk together. Art is just such a great expression, and you can get it out in a way that everybody can jump on board with it. Some things might be a little bit too hard to take, but if you're singing a song or playing a song or painting a picture, that is just something so warm for the human spirit that most anybody can get to it if they allow themselves. So through art, you can speak about just about anything that I can think of. And through art, everything has been spoken about. So I think you cannot hide from yourself a whole hell of a lot if you are going to convey something wonderful to somebody else. You have to go down in there and dig deep in order to make that emotion mean something to yourself as well as somebody else. So I think that also art unifies people. I've had people come to my show who haven't spoken to their husband or their mother or father, but they know that they like the music of you fill in the blank, and they know I'm going to do some of it. So they'll come to the show and actually can smile at each other, actually can have something unified that everybody agrees with. So, you know, it is just, if you feel like crying and you need to have that emotion out, there's a song that's going to touch you and that tear will come. Art can be satirical. It just can be everything because it speaks to our human spirit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, James, I was wondering, as Ms. Fakira was speaking about, you know, we know you as a visual artist and also, you know, through your writing, which is visual, and your photography, your art, your visual art. And now we're going to see you as an artist, your artistry in another fashion, you know, coming from another part of you. And I was wondering, so what has been released as a part of the, now that you're glitterati, what's sparkling for you now?
Well, I think
glitteratian.
The what?
Glitteratian.
He's a glitteratian.
A glitteratian, okay. I think that, you know, I get a chance to talk with Faye often as we're putting this this program together. But, you know, to talk about some of the things that we learn in class is that it takes, as I described it to her from my own experience, it takes what you think about a song in your head. And through her workshops, it allows us to, you have an image in your head of what you think the song should sound like. And what it does is it marries that to what it actually sounds like. So she teaches us how to express ourselves in such a way that you're not just hearing it in your head anymore. You're able to come to the class and you're able to express it. And it's a free space. It's a safe space that allows us to be able to express ourselves musically.
I remember when I first heard you, Ms. Carol was at the College of Alameda at one of our Black History Month events, and you were the special guest. Maybe I'd heard you before then. Oh, I think I had, but I'm not sure. But it left an impact. And you did your famous the history of our people through music, and I don't remember the name of the song, but it was something you ended with, and you just gave us, you know, Black history with a song. You're like, there was this happened, and here's the music, and this happened, and here's the music. And another time I remember, you know, sort of a conversation around the Black nativity that used to happen at Lorraine Hansberry Theater when its founders were still alive. And that was a really wonderful program. And then one year, your father, I think he made his transition that year.
Yes,
and,
he did.
And you were talking about your father. And I just wanted to allow you in our closing moments an opportunity to talk about, you know, your family, your father, your mother. I know your sister, she's a poet, and you have her, mm-hmm. you know, share her poetry. You know, you invite your daughter, who is a renowned pianist, and also she's a composer, and she does rap, and
mm-hmm.
she's just fabulous.
Yes.
Yeah. Just wanted you to talk a little bit about your people.
Wow, I don't think I've had anybody ever ask me that. because actually I grew up in a time where people were so neighborly and so giving to one another. That's one of the things that I remember just stands out in my mind, is how much community it was around my house. Because my sister was the kind of a person who would bring home stray dogs, stray cats, stray people, because our doors was always open to people. So our friends would always be there. I would always be singing somewhere, dancing somewhere. And it was just, my father made it so possible, though he wasn't really a big advocate of art, but he was a supporter of us. So whatever we wanted to do, he was supportive in us doing it. And he was a homebody, so he just would go and work, bring his home money home to our house, to my mom, who ran the house like a perfect housewife that she still is. I mean, when I first grew up, I tried to be the housewife she is. But that, I had to give that thought up. she is the original June Cleaver, and she does it so naturally and so wonderfully, and she's so loving towards people, till it made me want to be loving towards people. And my grandmother, who I stayed with in Mississippi for a long time before I moved with the rest of my family, had taught me that I could do anything that I wanted to do. So that was kind of stuck in my head. And everybody around me knew that Faye was going to be singing and dancing. So that was kind of a given. And it was just fun. Fun. I was active in school. I come from the era where you could borrow a cup of sugar across the fence. So everybody was always supportive of everybody else. I remember my grandmother would take people in when they was coming from rural Mississippi to come up to Meridian to go to school, and she would take people in free of charge just to help them. She wanted them to get their education. So education was always a big thing in our household. And when I moved to California, I saw that same kind of spirit where my mother and father would help people out, take people in, help raise my cousins. You know, it was just fun to be in the neighborhood. You knew everybody. Everybody knew you. And if you came to my house, you would have to sit and eat and drink. My father would say, ask my mother to fix them a plate. Verde, my mother's name is Verde, and he would holler out, Verde, fix him a plate, as my sister's bringing more people in. So it was always a lot of people, a lot of food, a lot of music, a lot of activities, a lot of camaraderie. It just was a great time and space to be in. And I was so blessed to have that kind of a supportive, nurturing environment in my family and the community around. So it helped me to form myself to want to give to people and want things to be all right with people. And then I got a little radical. I joined the Black Panther Party. My father wasn't really happy about that, but he got over it because, you know, we needed everything. We needed Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. We needed Malcolm X. We needed everybody. And, so I just kind of I got more into community, more into politics through that medium. And my husband was also very community-minded. So all of that kind of spilled over from when I was growing up in Meridian, Mississippi, with my grandmother, who was a very, very active woman in the community and who was a teacher. And, you know, back in those days, to be a teacher was that most highest honor you could have in most honored profession. So I really started singing there, going to school with her. And then when I moved to California, it was just kind of continuous of the same thing. I started being more in church in California. It wasn't that I wasn't in church in Mississippi. It just was a Methodist church, and it wasn't a lot of young people activities. But when I moved to Pittsburgh with my mom and went to Solomon Temple Missionary Baptist Church, there was a whole lot of young people activities, including a choir. So that's where I started that musical influence there. So it just was, everything was just rich and wonderful. You know, given the teenage disease that all teenagers go through, what I call the teenage disease, when you want to have your own mind and do your own thing and your parents are trying to still keep you under their thumb and under their, you know, under their rules. So I went through a certain amount of that, not a heck of a lot, but a certain amount. So we had kind of normal things in that way. But the overall, my overall upbringing was just showing me unity. It was showing me, because my mother and father was a good team, that they showed me teamwork within a family. And from the influence of my grandmother and my husband, it was community outside of the family that you had to be aware of and be a part of and be motivated by. So all of that served to make me who I am, and I did have a terrific and still do have a terrific family with my daughter. My husband since passed on, and my father since passed on. But my husband and my father both left me with wonderful, wonderful memories, lots of information. They were both information-driven. And, you know, just a wonderful sense of self that I hope that we've given to my daughter, who's so extremely talented in this world. So, you know, and then I want to just have everybody else's children to be wonderful and know that they can do and be anything that they want in this world if you're willing to work for it and go through the rigors of it, because it's not always easy and it's not always fun, but you still can accomplish something if you have it in you and you're driven to do that and you don't mind hard work and you know that you're going to have obstacles that you can get over, around, or under. So that's just the, kind of the story of me in a nutshell.
Right, yeah. I want the audience to know again that we're speaking to James Knox, who is one of the members. Well, he's one of the James, what is your title?
I have no title. I'm just I'm just the vanguard of the music. Keeper of the flag.
Vanguard of the music. Yeah, and representing on the show the Jazz Journalists Association, which is recognizing the dynamic Miss Faith Carroll with the Jazz Hero Award at Yoshi's in a couple of weeks, Saturday, April 12th, from 1 to 3, and it's going to really be fabulous. I was wondering, Ms. Carroll, are you going to are you going to have your daughter or your sister as special guests that afternoon?
Well, my sister is ill at this point, and she can't attend. My daughter's going to be out of town that day, and she can't attend. But my mom is coming over, and some of my cousins are coming over. And we're going to have, besides the glitterati singing, I'm going to have some of the students from my music and community program to come and sing, and some of my cohorts that I have sang with, Frankie Kelly, Denise Perrier, Kenny Washington, they're all going to come and partake in the festivities. And my, like I said, my glitterati is going to perform, and I'll probably do a couple of songs. And the band, which will be the young phenom now, is Joe Warner, who's on piano, and Howard Wiley is on sax, Geechee Taylor on drums, and Ron Belcher on bass. So they're going to have a crack group to play with, to sing with. And it's just going to be a celebration and a hallelujah good time.
Yes.
Certainly, certainly. Yeah, it's going to be really fabulous. I was, when I was looking at, again, at you know, that you were born and stayed with your grandmother in Meridian, and Meridian, Mississippi is one of those nexuses of the nexus spots of the civil rights movement.
That's,
you know,
right.
A lot of stuff was happening in Meridian, Mississippi, and so just thinking, and then you mentioned that you were a member of the Black Panther Party,
mm-hmm.
as well. Yeah, sort of, you know, all of that sort of, you know, going into the who that you are and mm-hmm. the who that you became, and then sort of that evolution, you know, sort of nothing, everything sort of keeps on showing up.
Yeah.
All these influences, they don't lie fallow.
No, they don't go away.
Mm-hmm.
They don't go away. Because, I mean, all things that was needed then is still needed now.
Mm-hmm.
So it can't go away. Can't go away. We have less music in schools now, not more. We have less. So I have to really beat the drum for music, and I have to beat the drum for kids. And I don't like people blaming kids for what they're inherited. They inherit the society that they have. So we cannot do anything but try to make a better society for them. And then they can know who they are and perhaps make an even better society for the next generation. And you cannot know who you are if you don't know where you've been and who helped to make you who you are.
Mm-hmm.
So in our case, there's not a lot of means for us to find those things out. So a person like myself, I just want to do my part in being able to let people know how valuable they are, let young people, middle-aged people, old people know how valuable they are, and that we can make contributions to make things better.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that, and I work towards that just on a one-on-one, everyday basis,
mm-hmm.
person to person. And our children are so beautiful and so valuable, and, oh, I just love them so much. I do. And they love me back, so, you know, it's great.
Yeah, certainly, it's certainly, I see the reciprocity there, you know, when I'm in your company. And I wanted to, I'm going to play one of the pieces you sent me, Strange Fruit, and I wanted you to talk about that particular selection, which, you know, within itself has a whole lot of history, you know, because they've actually made a film about it, and there are books about it.
Because it's
certainly more than a song.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And it's such a dreaded part of our history, and it's something that people don't really like to think about or revisit, and I can understand that. But at the same time, I liken it to the Holocaust, and we don't want to forget the Holocaust either, any of those things, because then they might reap themselves. And I think that in the world of trying to make everything okay, our kids need to know about that. So when I say to them Strange Fruit, they kind of look at me like, what the heck are you talking about, Strange Fruit? Because they didn't live through that. They don't know anything about that. They didn't live through the 60s. They didn't live through the water hoses. They didn't live through the dogs and all of the venom. And the it's so subliminal now and so covert. It's such a covert thing now. You don't really know about it. So I always ask them, what do they think about fruit? And then, what is fruit? And then, of course, they'll say apples and oranges. And I say, yeah, they hang from trees, right? And they say, yeah. I say, well, what do you think about a human being hanging from a tree? Indeed, that is strange. Very, very strange. So then they kind of get it, you know. When you say lynchings, they get it. But when you say strange fruit, unless I really explain to them, then they don't know, because there's no way for them to know. They watch MTV and BET, and they don't talk about strange fruit. So, but then it gives them an awareness of how we got to be where we are and the struggle that it took and all of these people hanging in these trees for us to be, you know, feeling so liberal and so happy, and we can walk together, black and white, ebony and ivory. Well, then you had to be told by your parents how to walk and who you could speak to and who you couldn't look at and all those things, or else you would be ending up strange fruit. So, and Billie Holiday, they didn't want her to do that song, but she did it anyway. So I wanted to make sure that when I did my tribute to Billie Holiday, that I would include that song, because it touches me so deeply, and just for its historical value as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which one of your CDs is this on?
A tribute to Billie Holiday live at Yoshi's.
Okay. Will you have some of your products available at the award ceremony?
I sure will. I sure will, and I hope that people would take some of them home with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly, certainly. And do you have a website where people can find out about, you know, your various projects in case they want to, you know, bring their children by or become one of your students?
Yeah, I have a website, faithcarol.com, but you know what? I never hardly be on my website, if I'm going to be honest with you. I do more stuff on Facebook.
Oh, Facebook,
than
okay.
I do on my website, but I have my bio on there. It's a lot of stuff on there that to be gained, that's for sure, faithcarol.com.
Mm-hmm.
But I usually post most of my stuff on Facebook, and you can reach me at faithcarolbiz, B-I-Z, B as in boy, I, and Z as in zebra, at gmail.com, and that is my email address, and I really will respond to you. So, but you have those means. You can reach me through the website, faithcarol.com, F-A-Y-E-C-A-R-O-L, and .com, or you can go on Facebook and look me up, Faith Carol. You can reach me via email, faithcarolbiz@gmail.com.
Okay. Well, thank you both so much, James. And Ms. Faith Carol, for joining us to talk about the Jazz Hero Awards. And I was also wanted to also mention that this coming week is the 20th anniversary of the Rwanda genocide, and I wanted to tell people that I also want to play your song "Strange Fruit" as a libation to that those million Africans that were killed in 100 days.
Oh, Lord. Mm-hmm. Please do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was...
James? Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry, I interrupted you, Ms. Carol.
Oh, I was just going to say, please do, because that is what I mean by those things repeating.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to be vigilant about it. So I would be so honored if you would pray that in tribute to the genocide there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. And James, any closing thoughts about the association, about the awards?
No, we just want people to come out and celebrate with Faith Carol. As you mentioned, it's on next Saturday, 1 to 3 p.m. at Yoshi's Oakland, and we look forward to just all coming together and having a good time for this great Bay Area legend and educator.
Well, I just got to say thank you. I have to really say it really loudly and clearly. Thank you, James Knox, for all that you and your organization has done and brought forth in my name. I really, really, really appreciate it. And thank you, Wanda, for always being supportive of the arts in general. I really appreciate you for that, and that we could not have it without people like yourselves. So from my mouth to your ears, thank you.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Faye. You're welcome. All right, you both have a wonderful day today, and look forward to seeing you next week.
All righty.
All right, great.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Fruit. 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 I think of fruit as apples, and oranges, and bananas. I certainly don't think of human beings as being fruit. But this song was banned for Billie Holiday. But she sang it anyway. That's right. So for the children that are in here, when I say strange fruit, in indeed, it is quite strange to have a human being hanging from a tree and call it fruit. Strange. Southern trees bear a strange fruit, blood on the leaves.
Oh, so bitter.
Might have to think about that a little bit. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. It gets me. Ooh, it gets me. Thank you. I think I'm going to close this set, but I want to tell you that you have been exquisite. I know exquisite when I feel it. And these cats and this chick has been exquisite. Thank you. Okay. All right.
And that was the dynamic Miss Faye Carroll, who's getting the Jazz Heroes Award. Next week, April 12th at Yoshi's in Oakland, 1 to 3 p.m. Don't want to miss it. That was Strange Fruit from her tribute to Billie Holiday. And I want to remind people that Cultural Odyssey is celebrating its 35th anniversary this weekend. They had their first concert program yesterday, Thursday evening, 6 o'clock, and it continues today, Friday, 6 p.m., and Saturday, tomorrow, is the gala. You don't want to miss it. We had Idris Akamor and Redessa Jones, founder, and Idris Akamor is a founder of Culture Odyssey. Redessa Jones is artistic director, and Lyrica Holmes is one of their featured guests at this 35th anniversary event, and Lyrica is a wonderful harpist and singer, and so she's in town, first time in San Francisco to be, participate in this wonderful, wonderful event, which is a tribute to one of our cultural, not trying to be redundant, but being redundant nonetheless, cultural institutions and landmarks, Cultural Odyssey, 35 years, wonderful, wonderful work. And this event is taking place at the African American Art and Cultural Center in San Francisco, 762 Fulton Street, near Webster, not far from Japantown, not far from City Hall either. It's real centrally located, easy to get to on public transportation, and there's on-site parking lot, which is secure. So don't want to miss this. The Medea Project, Theater for Incarcerated Women, are there's actually a film which is looking at their work with the HIV/AIDS community, and then the People's Orchestra is going to perform, as well as the Pyramid group that's really historic itself. And I wanted to play this Pyramids mix that Idris sent to me last week, just in case you missed last week's program. So I want to close out with that, let you listen to this. And I might play a little bit more music, but definitely don't want to miss Cultural Odyssey's 35th anniversary celebration. And congratulations to Idris Akamor and Redessa Jones. kind of stuck up on me. Yeah, that was the Pyramids, who are going to be performing tonight and tomorrow as a part of the 35th anniversary of Cultural Odyssey in San Francisco in the Burial Clay Theater, 762 Fulton Street. Really wonderful venue and really wonderful organization. Oh, my goodness, they're just doing so much wonderful work. And Radessa Jones and Idris Akamore are such a great creative team, bringing art to the people and certainly celebrating social change and revolutionary movements through the work, which continues, you know, despite the desert surrounding funding. They are such great fundraisers and always find money to be able to do the work that they do, which is also admirable and certainly worthy of emulating and finding out how they do what they do. And I also wanted to mention that in San Francisco as well, in Bayview Hunters Point, this evening and tomorrow afternoon, there's a free performance of Dying While Black and Brown at Zaco Studios. You have to look it up to get the exact address, but it's on Yosemite. And tonight, performance is at 8 o'clock, and it also is going to feature a panel discussion around, you know, incarceration, mass incarceration of people of African and African descent, Latinos as well, who are also of African descent, and execution as well of men of color at a higher rate than other communities. And we think about California, that we incarcerate more men and women than, you know, nations. I mean, we incarcerate so many people that we actually can populate some of the nations in the world with those people that are behind bars. Imagine if they were all released. Imagine a world without incarceration. And, yeah, so I just wanted to mention that as well, people who missed it as a part of the Black Choreographers Festival Here and Now, that there are two free performances, one tonight at 8 o'clock and one tomorrow afternoon at Zaco Studios. And tonight at Joyce Gordon Gallery from 6 to 9, there's going to be an artist talk. There is a wonderful exhibit there of quilts, and I'm going to be facilitating a discussion with the seven artists who have work there presently. So Joyce Gordon Gallery is a free talk, and Joyce Gordon Gallery is on 14th Street, very near Broadway. I think it might be 14th, I'm not certain exactly, but you can't miss it. And that's tonight. And then next week I am going to be on a panel at the Magic Theater. And the play there is every 5 minutes, and it's a new work, world premiere. And so that's going to be, and it's looking at solitary confinement as well. So, yeah, you should come on by, and I'm going to be on the panel after the performance. And you can visit the Magic Theater website, and they also have a 10% discount on tickets for that evening. And I believe I'm not certain if the performance is at 7 or 8. You should check the Magic Theater website to make sure that, you know, you come on time to see the play and then stay for the talk. I want to go out with Bookmon Experience. Didn't get a chance to play all of the piece, A Voodoo Spirit, and so I wanted to actually play all of that. And maybe to sort of warm it up, I want to play the Manding drumming, and then go into the A Voodoo Spirit, sort of in honor of Bukman and Imam Fatiman, who were the Voodoo priest and priestess who called on the Orisha to protect and guide the people in their revolution, and which was successful. And independence and liberation. And I want to call on that spirit again to heal heal the spirits in Haiti and help the people move toward a more just society, because people are still suffering. They were suffering before the earthquake, and they are still, people are still displaced and suffering now. So want to send that out. And then, again, I mentioned earlier that there is an event tonight that's being hosted by the Haiti Action in Berkeley. So you should visit wandaspicks.com for the information about that. And, yeah, stay in touch, stay in tune. Can't go wrong with Wanda's Picks radio show. Thanks for tuning in. Peace and blessings.
We're going to dance one of the rhythm of Haiti we took from the Manding, community of Bala in the north of Haiti. We're going to dance Haiti with their rhythm.
And I played a little bit at the beginning of the show, and here I am now going to play the entire piece because you didn't get a chance to hear the chorus.
Vision from the spirit, grand voix, native spirit. Vision of the third attention. We'll be right back.
guys will arrive to find himself and with a big fight. Yeah, fight against the dress. Yeah, we all dress up to accept the logic of the system. Yeah, the religion and the politics. Two dangerous things to prevent us to find God, to find yourself. They make limits to our possibility of perception. No, we have to change that. We have to find the totality of yourself.